And I'm Daddy.
This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Jeff, I think as an award-winning podcast, there is one thing that we have always been honest and truthful and steadfast about, and that is...
That is the number of awards we've won?
That is the number of awards we've won, yeah. And number two, fuck numbers, because math sucks.
Yes, math sucks! You know, if there's one thing you need to learn about science...
Thank you.
It's that arithmetic, mathematics, calculus, boring and unnecessary.
They suck. And people will say, but they're important to the sciences. They are a science. Let me ask you this, Jeff. If they're so important to science, and they are, and they are such a science, then how come we have the acronym STEM? And science and mathematics are not only separate on that, Jeff, but they're as far away from each other as possible.
As they always should be.
Think about it.
Keep your math out of my science. I've said it for a long time.
Keep your data away from my facts. That's all I'm saying.
You know what I like to imagine, Anthony?
What's that?
To imagine a first-time listener who just sort of scrolled through, did a search for science podcasts, scrolled through and just put this one on play.
And you know found the truth. And
I'm
found
give it a
the
shot.
Truth. After years of listening to other science, you can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes, science news.
That's not Anthony putting the number two up twice on either side of his head. Because
I wouldn't
we
know
hate
what
numbers.
That looks like. I wouldn't know what that looks like. There's a reason we hate math, Jeff, and it's not just because it's the gymnastics of the sciences. It's because fucking gymnasts.
Dude. There has never been a better descriptor for math than the gymnastics of the sciences.
That's all it is.
We need t-shirts.
But there's a reason we don't like it, and it's because
it's hard.
It requires a lot of thought. It requires literal computation, Jeff.
And there's one thing I hate in my science, it's thought.
Listen. There's nothing I hate more than when I'm thinking along at a good clip and a number comes up and slows my thinking down.
I was really going there. I got things going. I was thinking, and then it's like five.
Yeah.
Five? What are you doing in there, five?
You know what I'm saying. You're picking up exactly what I'm putting down,
Jeff. We're on
down,
the same wavelength,
Jeff.
Definitely. Yeah.
And there have been many, many studies about this, and there have been many, many studies that say that as human beings, we just want to keep math out of our thoughts as much as possible. And we just want to keep numbers as easy as possible. There are literal studies going all the way back to basically in marketing and advertising mostly. But they go back. The earliest one I found was in the early 80s. And it was about something called attribute framing. And attribute framing is something that you're probably familiar without knowing the name for it. Attribute framing is these chips aren't 20% fat. These chips are 80% fat free.
Yes, right. Attribute framing. I get it. I thought attribute framing was where you do a crime, but then you set up attribute to take the fall. But now I understand what you mean by it, where it is.
Now, did you really think that?
I thought maybe perhaps.
Did you go out of your way to think that and then say it? Because that might be your one.
Maybe. So you're it's about taking the same statistic, the same fact, but presenting it in a way that tells a different narrative. Right?
Exactly.
Paints a different picture.
Exactly. And that's been used in advertising, but not just in advertising and marketing, but also in the presentation of data across science, politics, whatever you need to explain to people. Obviously, you frame it in the most positive way you can. You want people not to think about the 80% fat or the 20% fat. You want them to think about 80% fat free.
Right.
And what's interesting is there have even been studies done that show that you can hand somebody two different, like, say it's a package of ground beef, and I hand you two packages of ground beef, and I say, Jeff, this ground beef is 80% fat-free. This ground beef is 20% fat. Now, in your mind, you know that they're both the same. But right. Guess which one you're going to buy.
Right. I want the one that reinforces the positive perception that I want for this piece of food.
I could even tell you what I'm about to do. And if you're honest with yourself, the one that says 80% fat free seems more attractive to you. And you'll know right. why, but you can't help it.
My favorite one of these, I think I've brought it up before. My favorite one of these are the billboards that you see driving into Vegas that say our slot machines have a 99% payout, which is basically them saying we will take 1% of your money all the time. We
all
will
the time.
Always, you will never get your money back because we're always taking at least 1% of it.
It's not 100 people sit down and 99 of them are winners.
Right. No, it's of the money we get, we pay out not all of it.
Not
we
all
take,
of it.
We take 1% of it guaranteed.
We're taking everything. And you're throwing in a buck at a time, and those machines last 15 seconds. So thank you, is what they're saying.
Yeah.
But there's a very interesting study that was just run this year that I find absolutely brilliant. And this is Gaurav Jain, who is an assistant professor of marketing at the Lally School of Management at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute that we're all familiar with.
Yeah. Oh, go fight in Lally's.
Go the fight in Lally's is what they say. And we all know their fight song. Lally's, Lally's, everywhere we go. That's it. That's the whole fight song. They're always Lally's is what they're saying.
Yeah.
And this is about attribute framing, but also attribute framing and our desire to avoid complicated thinking. And this says, Jeff,
we're simple people with simple needs.
We're simple people Humans. With simple needs, simple minds. Don't you forget about me.
Don't you forget about me.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da. And this, what this says is, I can present you with two statistics. One of them can be demonstrably better. But if the other one, the lower statistic, is a round number, it seems more attractive to you.
Oh, that is so pathetic. You're pathetic. Seriously?
So basically,
I want an example of this.
Great. I will give you an example of this. So consider, let's say, I don't know if you've heard, I just recently heard about this. There's apparently some sort of a virus going around.
What? No.
Yeah. And let's say somebody comes up with a vaccine for the virus, and they go, our vaccine is 90% effective. And then somebody else comes out with a vaccine, and they go, our vaccine is 91.27% effective. Which vaccine are people going to want?
You're telling me that they will prefer the 90% effective just because it feels nice and round? I don't have to do the math on an extra 1.27%?
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, and I'll tell you why. They ran this study, the Fight and Lally's.
Yeah.
And here's what the Fight and Lally's came up with. There is something about 91.27, because you have to think about it, that makes you think about the other number. It makes you think about the remainder.
It highlights the hole. It's the donut hole theory, where it's like, hey, I love this donut. I don't think about the hole, but then somebody's like, you got to think about that hole, and you go, why is there a hole in that donut?
That could be a more delicious donut.
There could be more. There's no reason for there to be a hole here. Just give me the whole donut.
Give me one tiny round cake that I can just eat, and it can be an unbroken puck of deliciousness. Yes.
Give me a donut puck.
Because right now what I'm doing is I'm going into the donut place, I'm buying a dozen donuts, I'm buying a dozen donut holes, and I'm shoving them back in, and
that's
it's a lot of work.
And you get to charge me twice.
You charge me twice for what is essentially one donut, and I do it every day for at least two meals a day, and I'm not depressed.
So I like this. It makes sense, but part of me pushes back against it to think it feels like it's much easier for me to get to the 10% from 90% to go, oh my God, it's 10% ineffective, than it is for me to go, it's 8 point. I don't know. How ineffective is this one? You know?
Right. It does seem that way. But what's great about it is you don't think about a round number really at all. Like it would be
About numbers at all.
Exactly. And so it would be easy for you to get to that 10%, and it's obvious for you to get to that 10%, but what your brain does is goes, 90%, great, almost entirely effective. Doesn't think about it as a number, thinks about it as a concept.
That is so true. It is abstracted. It is not a number at all. It is 90% is a thing that exists. This kind of reminds me of... you know, this kind of new approach to learning languages, would you see with, you know, like the Rosetta Stone software and Duolingo and stuff, this sort of like in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, this new approach to learning languages. When I was in school, you learned a language by looking at the word that you know in the language, you know, in my case, English, and then looking at the word, the equivalent word, and going, okay, orange is naranja, you know, that whatever it is, green is verde, and trying to memorize that. And now the way they teach languages is doing it via abstraction. So you look at a picture of an orange and then you think of the word. So you just associate the concept with the word, which is how we learn language originally. That's how we as children learn languages.
Yeah.
How do I communicate the concept that I want? Oh, what's the sound that communicates that concept? And similarly, I think it's less the process in the mind of going, okay, what's the math of this equation? And more like, oh, the concept I'm trying to equate to you is that it's really, really effective. And so 90% is this abstracted, nebulous concept of things that are genuinely or generally really effective.
Exactly. That's exactly what they found. They did multiple studies with multiple data sets. And what was really interesting is... The 80-20 split is always seen as it's really simple. It's really easy for people to figure out. If you give them an 80% fat free or a 20% fat, they always go for the one that sounds more positive. It's harder for us to, because this also comes up against, number one, we're thinking about concepts and we're thinking about what we want out of something. That's where attribute framing comes in. So we're not thinking about the 81.27. We like to see the 80. But what's really interesting is we will go out of our way to avoid thinking the negative one. And and it's... hold on. I want to get this right. So what they did was they gave... one study was the negative positive, and they presented it in two different ways. They would give people this random thing, and they'd be like, hey, this person wants to move to this country. This country has an 80% employment rate. Should they move to this country? And, you know, some people were like, some people were like, yes. Some people were like, no. When they said this country has a 20% unemployment rate, more people said, no, you shouldn't move to the country, right?
Yeah.
What's interesting is when they decided to present things as non-round. So this country has an 81.3% employment rate versus an 18.7% unemployment rate, right?
Yeah.
The spread of who chose positive and negative stayed the same overall, but more people thought both situations were negative.
Oh, so, interesting. It didn't mask the positive as effectively. The round number effect just kind of it eliminates that abstraction, right?
Yeah, technically 81.27 is a more positive employment rate, but overall more people found both to be negative.
Because you're thinking about the actual numbers here instead of just going, "Oh, 80% is a good is just equated to the abstraction of a pretty good thing."
Exactly.
I think this is also something that I have thought about often in the, you know, 10% off sale, 10% off sale, 20% off. Everything must go up to 20% off. And then I go, okay, well, I bought a thing that's $8, you know, 20% off of that ain't moving the needle. You know what I'm saying? You know? And so you get these things where the store's like, 30% off. and then ultimately it's not your brain goes, oh,
I was gonna spend $10 instead I spent $7. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I guess you saved a little bit. Like, you did. You saved 30%. But, like, on the other side of it, like, for things that are huge, I mean, it makes more of a difference, but it's still just, like, you're still spending more money than you need to.
Right.
And so, like, right. I'm always trying to figure out what the sweet spot for me of sales would be where 30% means something, you know? If you're like, well, it's a car and it's 30% off, it's like, well, if I'm definitely looking for a car, and I'm definitely looking for that sort of car, right, and it's 30% off. Okay. But like, there are very few situations. I mean, that's why, like, one of the first things they tell you on like consumer tips sites and things like that is like, don't look for a sale, look for the thing, and then wait for the thing to go on sale, because sales ultimately, like you're saying, they don't move the needle.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the thing is we love positive numbers and we love to jump at positive numbers, but that is just another side effect of the same thing that they're studying, which is we don't think about numbers.
Yeah.
We hate to think about them.
We really don't. And increasingly, we don't think about facts at all. So it's nice that it feels like numbers were the gateway drug to not even thinking about truth in general. You know what I mean? Like, don't give me the actual details. Give me the story. What's the story of unemployment?
Right.
The story of unemployment sounds great. 80% employment. Boy, that sounds lovely.
Well,
yeah, well, two out of every 10 people is unemployed. That doesn't sound good.
That's pretty high. That sounds pretty high. I'd like it to be zero optimally. And I mean, that's one of these things that we see all the time in political campaigns. This is something that's so in the situation we're in right now in the world with, you know, pandemics and things like that, but also in the situation that we're going to be in the United States in November, we see this all the time. It's not about actual unemployment rates or plans or programs. It's about the story of Joe the plumber.
Right.
Right. That's what it's about. I don't even remember what the story of Joe the plumber was about, but I know that there was Joe the plumber and that was the narrative, right? You stick a narrative onto a person, and that narrative proves a thing that people are looking for. And then you look at that versus somebody like an Elizabeth Warren or a Bernie Sanders who are like, I have an actuarial table of how this is going to work. And people are like, fuck off.
Right. Exactly.
Numbers suck.
Yeah. I don't want to be lectured to.
Bubba. It felt like they were talking down to me. Yeah, they were. They were. Because you're dumb and you don't know the numbers. We're all dumb and we don't know the numbers.
Not only that, but you don't care to know. You don't care to know. How about you put a person who actually does care to know in charge of the thing that you don't care to know about? No, I'd rather have someone who's dumb like me.
Yeah.
I want to be represented in my stupidity. That's the, ay bay.
Yeah. I mean, and that's sort of the thing is knowing this about ourselves and knowing how far we go out of our way to avoid sort of analytical thinking, I think is a really important thing to know. And we know that our brain is a pattern-making machine. We know that our brain likes to jump to conclusions because quick, fast action equals survival. Quick, fast action equals a lack of anxiety and a lack of depression and a lack of negative things that we feel in the short term, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's important, a study like this and a story like this are important because it reminds us, hey, especially in times like these, you got to slow down and think. Now is the most important time to slow down, think, take this information in, really analyze it, and figure out what everything means to you. And that's it, you know, that's it. That's what I think
I'm down for the slowing down part.
Mm-hmm.
It's that pesky thinking part that feels so laborious, you know?
Like, yeah.
I got shit to do. And by shit, I mean napping, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Every time I start to think, I just throw on another YouTube video where somebody is restoring an old console and or iPod.
Oh, dude, I love me some restoration YouTube.
God.
There's a guy who does art restorations.
Yeah.
And he just like scrapes them for like 6 hours at a time. It's just a close up shot of him scraping a painting.
Yep.
Ah, dude, that is like catnip to me. You know what that does not have?
What's that?
Numbers. Not a single number in the whole thing.
That's right. art is the best science we have. And that's why we changed the acronym from STEM to STEAM. We did it for two reasons. Number one, to show our importance and reverence for the arts. And number two, to keep science and math further the fuck apart.
Push them away. If only there were more letters you could make into a word between S and M. There aren't any. STEAM is the longest one.
Hmm. Okay. Keep that safe search on, Jeff. Keep that safe search on forever. You got kids at home and you're a sweet boy. You're a sweet, sweet boy. Hey, you know what? Thinking about numbers is hard. And that's the conclusion we've come to. But an easy way to not think about numbers is to give us your money and let us think about it from here on out.
Just look at the highest number that your keyboard has and type that into the Patreon field when it says how much you're giving us.
Type it twice. Type it three times. Whatever the highest number on your keyboard is, I don't know what your keyboard looks like. Your keyboard's probably different from mine. Take the highest number you can find and type it in there 3-4 times. See what happens.
See what happens. And you know what? Make it a round number. Add a zero.
Our brain loves those. All you do is you head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. You hit whatever of those numbers makes you feel comfortable and good. And then we give you some stuff in return. Maybe last week you heard our episode with Tom Merritt. Patrons at any level got an extra little bonus episode with Tom Merritt. If you like those opening conversations we have in the beginning of episodes, support us at the $3 level or above. You get one of those every week. Those whole conversations exist, Jeff.
They're not just for nobody.
They're not just for nobody. They're for people. It's like a whole other show.
You know what else we did, Anthony?
What did we do? Successfully, probably.
We watched the entire Cannonball Run 2 with our patrons.
With fewer of our patrons than we thought. There were some technical things. But listen, a lot of us watch Cannonball Run. And listen, those of us who didn't watch Cannonball Run 2, you're probably welcome. You know what I'm saying? We did watch it together.
Let's just say it was time I wouldn't say well spent. You know, it felt like a waste of a lot of energy. And that's okay.
That's okay.
Because
come
we
waste energy
it together.
Come waste energy and money with us. We're not wasting money. We're wasting your money. Help us waste your money. our Patreon is now 80% waste free.
That is amazing. That sounds like a very good thing to me.
It sounds like an incredibly good round number. To come hang out in the Discord with us, get those extra episodes, get monthly or more frequent than monthly hangouts, head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
Hey, Anthony, it seems like we're talking about things that take some of the strain and effort and stress off our minds, right? We're kind of talking a little bit about that already this episode. And we have talked in the past.
Are you trying to get high? Are you trying to get high right now?
No, man. I want to talk to you about something that we've talked about before, which is how habitualizing certain behaviors can take some of the stress off of your life. This is the philosophy many people attribute to why Steve Jobs wore the same outfit every single day. It's one less thing to worry about.
This is brain as computer, right? And you can only run so many processes. There's only so much RAM. The more you can turn into an automatic background process, the less you have to think about, the more smoothly your brain will run and the more smoothly your life will run.
Yeah, we can only process a few things at a time. There are only so many things that we can do at a time. So why, it's some people say don't sweat the small stuff, right? Mm-hmm. This is not even don't sweat the small stuff. It's remove the small stuff from the equation in the first place.
I have to say, this is something that I've talked about a little bit before, but as somebody who has ADHD, this is a big part of my day. This is a big part of what it is. How do I set things up? How do I set my day up to where everything is where I need it? I don't have to think about it because my brain can only handle so many things at a time before wires get crossed and I wind up 3 hours into a task I didn't even plan on doing. And also, you're mostly high.
So.
And also, I'm mostly high, but listen to me. Those are two different things, and we're going to put them aside.
Put them aside.
Correlation is not causation, and math is not science. And these are two things I will take to my grave.
Thank you. So we have an article here from the Washington Post. This was posted on our subreddit, which is wehaveconcerns.reddit.com. This was posted by user Antorock. This is an article.
That's my favorite Thor movie.
Antorock. Yeah, it's a good one. It's also my favorite musical genre. Antorock. Uncles can also rock.
It's funnier when you keep going.
Yeah, I appreciate that. This is an article from the Washington Post all the way back in 2019, but I think it has a new relevance today, and I'm fascinated by it. This is an article introducing all of us to the Watsons, Ron and Diana Watson, who have, for 15 years, I guess 16 years now, been eating the exact same thing every single day. Ron and Diana Watson six days a week, they eat at the Texas Roadhouse in Wichita, Kansas, every day between 3 and 5 p.m. They walk into the Texas Roadhouse restaurant. They sit down at the same exact table. It's either table number 411 or 412, whichever is available. And they order the exact same thing. Ron orders barbecue chicken. Ron orders barbecue chicken, and Diana orders roadkill steak. They eat that. They drink the same exact thing. They eat that, and they go about their day. Now, you could say, well, they really love the food at Texas Roadhouse, and you would be right, but it goes one step deeper. That meal at the Texas Roadhouse that I eat between 3 and 5 p.m. is the only food they eat all day. The only meal they have. The rest of the day, they drink water with lemon. Ron has some water with lemon. While Diana starts the day with a protein shake.
This is intermittent fasting. Ron and Diana, were the first, these oldsters were the first people to do intermittent fasting as seen on Reddit.
Yeah. They set the entire Silicon Valley aflame with their intermittent fasting routine. I guess you could say that, but this is the only meal they eat. They eat the same thing and have done since 2004.
Why?
Ron is 69 years old.
Nice.
He is a military veteran, says he suffers from PTSD.
Okay.
And says that this kind of routine has helped him cope with the effects of PTSD.
I'd like to think that Ron is also in therapy.
I hope so. I don't know. This article does not specifically say that.
Because otherwise, this also kind of sounds like Ron just using this intense routine to avoid anything that could potentially put him in a state, which is most therapists will tell you is not the way to cope with something. But we'll move on from that because I don't know anything about Ron and I'm not a therapist.
Right. Well, here's what Ron says in his own words. He says, because they live their life with this precision, they have eliminated a lot of mundane tasks from their life. He says, quote, by the time you start your car, go to the grocery store, go through all this hassle, go home, cook, do the dishes, you're tacking on an hour or an hour and a half minimum to your day.
Ron, we can just go to the Texas Roadhouse. Everything I said, Ron, you and I are on the same page. Ron and I are intertwined. We are linked, Ron and
right?
I.
He says, no more grocery store trips, no more dishes to wash, no more meal planning, all of that completely eliminated from their lives. They literally eat this one meal every single day. Now, why do you say 6 days out of seven? Well, the seventh day
is the Lord's Day.
you might think that, but no, the seventh day, it turns out the Texas Roadhouse, it gets real busy on Saturdays. And Diana works late that day, so they head over to the Hog Wild Pit barbecue and eat there.
Okay. So still part of the routine.
Still part of the routine. 6 days at the Texas Roadhouse, one day at the Hog Wild Pit barbecue.
Now, I'm going to bring up the Texas Roadhouse menu. I'm going to bring up the prices here. I'm going to take a look at this. I'm going to see what's going on. So Ron has the sirloin, the 8-inch sirloin.
He has the barbecue chicken, and she has the roadkill steak.
Okay.
Now, they claim that they spend about $22 a day on their meal, including tip.
Yeah, barbecue chicken's $8.99, and then the roadkill steak. The roadkill is $9.99. So, yeah, I mean, they're... And then you take that times 6 days a week, you figure they spend about the same amount of money at the pit barbecue or whatever.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's about what you would spend for two people for groceries.
This says $540 a month they spend on food total.
That might even be, I don't know if it would be a little less, but depending on how you buy your groceries, maybe if they're not snacking or anything, right?
Yeah.
I just don't know how they do it.
They walk into the restaurant. They're known every day. They have the table. They know. You walk in. They don't even have to say their order. It's all just as frictionless as possible. Because when it's not,
Ron goes ballistic, dude. Ron goes ballistic. There was this one time where Ron threw a chair at a girl and then threw that girl out a window.
I don't want to make fun of Ron and his PTSD, but
I don't want to make fun of Ron and his PTSD either, but because that's 40%, that's only 40% of what she did. Diana gets worse.
she's the real monster.
Diana is the real monster here. The real monster is war in the military industrial complex. The second worst monster in this story, Diana.
Yeah.
And then clearly. Ron. And then, but so they don't get hungry. They don't crave anything during the day. They're totally good.
They claim that they're totally good, that they don't feel bored with how they eat. They really still enjoy this food.
They never switch it up.
They have two sons, Jesse and Clint, and Jesse and Clint find this very amusing. They don't always partake in the same dining habits. Jesse and Clint, full-grown adults, 32 sure. and 27. They've kind of become a little internet famous from this because they do this every single day, and it's been kind of come a little, had a little notoriety on the old internet.
For a second, I was looking to see if they were that old couple that did that commercial. That there's an SNL sketch that is Will Ferrell and Kate McKinnon, and they are pretending to be this old couple that eats at this restaurant every day, and they've eaten there every day for years, and they're trying to like say two lines to camera, and they keep fucking up, and it's based on a real behind the scenes video.
Yeah.
It's based on a real, and I was like, is this the couple from that video? But it's not, I checked. So Jeff, I mean, this is interesting, and it's certainly quirky, but tell me why this was fascinating to you, and tell me, What do we want to get out of this? What do you think we're getting here?
We've talked about this level of control and self-discipline and removing variables.
Right.
And to me, this is kind of the ultimate variable removal. In order to, you know, in Ron's case, it clearly sounds like he needs that for his mental health. Mm-hmm. And I can respect that.
Sure.
But I'm curious if you would be able to trim away variety, balance on the scale, the benefit of having this kind of frictionless existence on a certain mm-hmm. level, having this kind of removal of that stress. Because I tell you, I mean, it's a very first world problem, of course, and one that's maybe even embarrassing to bring up. But it's not uncommon for my wife and I to have sort of analysis paralysis. What are we going to eat tonight? You know, that
30% of being married, 30% of being in a committed relationship is frustration over what's going to happen for dinner.
And that's a nice round number.
That's how you know it's true. And I'm connecting it to people and to a thing that they can understand. And now it's a fact in your head.
So that's why math is terrible.
I just fooled you with math. Never believe it. Yes, I get what you're saying. I do think a lot, and I think especially with what a lot of us are going through right now, whether it's financial, whether it's social, whether it's whatever is happening with us right now, we are all wondering how much can we strip away? How much can we remove external things that factor into our lives? And what would that give us? What would that give us time for? I think in my case, I've been thinking about it a lot because so many external things were stripped away. And I think we all kind of went into quarantine or sheltering in place thinking, oh my God, I'm going to do so much with this free time.
It's going to be so great.
But we did.
Right. It felt like, and this is the other aspect of this that I wanted to bring up, which is A, I want a follow-up story to these people. What happened during quarantine for this couple? Like what?
They can't go to the Roadhouse.
They got
to
get takeout from the Roadhouse, maybe? I don't know. I want to find out. We need to investigate.
There were a few weeks definitely where there was nothing at the Roadhouse.
Right? Their life had gone topsy-turvy. Had to have gone topsy-turvy. I'm so curious.
But Diana must have lost it. There are so many bodies buried.
There is. Diana is still at large, I think. She's still... The other aspect of this is exactly what you're talking about, which is we've all been in this weird forced position of stripping away some things in our life, but it has resulted in more stress, right? And maybe that's because it's forced and not voluntary and not a choice, right?
Yeah.
But I also wonder if there is some stress in the rigidity of this lifestyle. You know, would a commitment to only eating the same thing for 15 years ultimately kind of loop around and become stressful?
I think that's something that a lot of people find when they try to live their life in a more, you see a lot of people trying to live in a more minimal, efficient, distraction-free, single tasking, all of these buzzwords, right? And for me, especially, I can sort of relate this to my own personal state a little bit. It's slightly different, but you know, talked up at the top of the beginning of this about how I set up routines and places and things in my life that to keep it friction free because of my ADHD brain, right? Because it becomes very frustrating to me when there are too many distractions around and I can't ignore them. And one thing that really happens that I had to work with my counselor about when I first started getting treated was things are not going to go according to the plan. Right. And when things don't go according to the plan, it's going to be bad. Yeah. Like that's the thing. And so you set up these routines and things like that to simplify your life. But the routines simplify the external to as much as you can control the external. But I think the real trick and the real kind of nut that you're getting at is you can only control what you control and you can only be minimal up to a point. And then something's going to get in the way.
Right.
And it's sort of the true healthiness of living sort of a minimal life or a distraction-free life and kind of being in the moment and having all that mental cruft kind of scraped away is that you're supposed to be more agile when these things come up. But what we find is because people are creatures of habit, even if those habits are efficient and stripped down and better, when you are taken out of your habit, you wind up getting just as frustrated. It's a natural reaction. But I do, you know, I do think that there are ways that you can simplify your life to kind of reclaim time, you know? And I don't think if the Roadhouse, going to this Texas Roadhouse is like reclaiming all that time that they would spend doing housework and shopping and all that stuff. And it's time they get to spend together and they like it. I think that's great. You know,
yeah, there's some more tidbits about them that I find interesting. One is that they basically have completely bare cupboards and a mostly empty refrigerator. Refrigerator only has protein shakes. They say they do not snack. They eschew fruits and vegetables and other snacks. They don't eat during the day. They only crave food at dinner time. Here's an interesting tidbit.
I hope they get that side salad, man.
There's some more details about what they order. They do order the side salad. I guess there was a Christmas promotion that happened a few years ago at the Texas Roadhouse that said that you could get free shrimp. So now they get shrimp with their meals for a while. Okay. If you buy a gift card, so they bought a $200 gift card and have gotten free shrimp for like a year. which is interesting. But check this out. In 2014, Ron suffered a heart attack at the Texas Roadhouse while eating dinner. And during that time, his wife picked up food from the Texas Roadhouse to deliver to him in the hospital while he was recovering.
Now, I'm not saying correlation is causation, because we said earlier that we weren't going to do that.
Right.
But I don't know, Ron. Maybe Ron, maybe buddy, maybe every buddy. Once in a while, get the salad, get the big salad with like a little steak added to it, Ron.
put some snacks by way of fruits and vegetables in the house, in maybe the refrigerator. Good refrigerator, you know?
Perfectly good refrigerator. Listen, Ron, barbecue chicken, sure. Maybe there's another chicken. Maybe there's a grilled chicken. I don't know. So this is interesting. So they're talking about the money and time reclaimed, and they're talking about all that stuff. What do they use that extra time for? Do they talk about that? What do they do?
They just talk about having a feeling of not wasting time on things that they consider to be frivolous. They say the only time that they cook is on Christmas Day.
Sure.
And that's only because those two restaurants are closed.
Right.
Well, yeah. And those two restaurants are closed. So they cook, and every Christmas they make a full meal of turkey, ham, sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, gravy, macaroni and cheese.
Sure. Cause that once a month cooking is a fun novelty, or once a year cooking.
Once a year.
It's like,
cooking.
Ooh, look, I'm cooking. That's fun.
Yeah.
Doing it every night is like, ugh. I guess.
So here's my question to you, Anthony.
Yeah.
Is there a meal you could have every day as your only meal for 15 years?
Not as my only meal. No, I don't think so. I don't think I could.
I don't think I could either.
And we've talked before about how I love good food, but it's more important to me to just get food out of the way most of the time. Like, I'm one of those people, but I do like a good dinner. I tried doing the Soylent for a while, and I was able to do that for like a meal or two a day. Doing it for all three meals a day will drive you insane. I think I'm not quite there. I do have the same breakfast most mornings, but I don't think I could do, number one, I there's no way I could do a meal a day. There's no way.
Just one meal a day at all.
Yeah, there's no way.
That would be hard in and of itself. You're right. I do think I would go crazy. I love food and find a lot of joy in food, much to my own, you know, chagrin. But I don't think there's anything, even my favorite food in the world. This feels to me like the, you know, locking the kid in the closet with the box of cigars approach. You know, this is like, you want to smoke? Here, try this. It feels like no matter how much I loved a meal, this would be the recipe for me to hate a meal. You know,
even I think about it, even during all this, when there's been like a lot of ordering takeout and stuff for me, or ordering delivery, like I do tend to go back to the same three or four places, but like, it has to be on rotation. Like it has to be, like, it can't be every night. I guess my question to you is this one, which is something about this article seemed to really stick with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause this definitely hits something in you. So you've been thinking about it. What are the things you've been thinking about eliminating or simplifying in your life? What did this article like stick in your head where you were like, oh my God, I could do this?
Well, I think it was more along the lines of the fact that we've all had to be in a monotonous place. Mm-hmm. I am pushing up against the monotony of the last 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding it debilitating. I'm finding it difficult to endure the static nature of life right now. The lack of variables, the fact that every single day I wake up and I'm in the same four walls. And yes, my family and I have been trying to get out, you know, just go for a drive together, or, you know, go when hiking trails were open, we would go on a hike with our masks, or, you know, trying to get some variety. But in general, not seeing human beings, not, you know, we go for walks and stuff, but it even that becomes like, it's the same walks, you know, it becomes, there's only so many different directions I can go from my front door when we walk. And
you can't drive a long way to walk because you got little ones, and that's just more time on time on time. It's a tether. You feel tethered.
I do. And so to me, this resonated. These people chose that kind of a life. And yes, there are other things in their life. I'm sure they have variety. They're not locked in their four walls as I have been, but it just resonated on such a deep level of this finding solace and serenity in that for Ron and his wife, as opposed to where I am now, which is feeling like a caged animal, feeling pent up and manic because of the constancy, because of the monotony of it all.
Yeah, it's really rough. And I think there's something to what you said about it, which is the forced nature of it, right? Because if this was the same time last year, you know, you and I might have been having an opposite discussion, which was like, I just want to get away to somewhere where it's quiet and I can sit in a room.
Yes, that is this ideal that seems so great when you're far away from it. But the reality is pretty hard to deal with, you know? And I'm having all these weird thoughts of like, I don't need clothes. I mean, not at all, but like I have the same five shirts that I've been wearing for the last 5 months and a couple of pairs of shorts here in the summertime. And like, I have a whole closet full of wardrobe that is unnecessary, right? Unnecessary.
Dude, we've been talking about this with me too, as I've been moving. It's like, I looked at all my stuff one day. Part of it is the new medication I'm on, but I looked at and the fact that I used to obsessively shop, but, I looked at all the stuff that I owned and I was like, who, why?
Yeah.
Why? And, I get it. I think the important thing for everyone right now is to be like, remember that, like, in another time in your life that was not too long ago, this period of reflection and isolation would have been considered a huge gift. And I'm not saying there's a silver lining to a worldwide pandemic, because there is not. But I think an important thing for all of us to remember is 6 months ago, for a lot of us, this would have been a huge gift to receive.
Yeah. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do, is how do I channel more Ron
in my life?
You know, how do I become the Watsons a little bit more, in the sense of finding some peace inside this structure, you know? I don't know how to do it.
I think a huge thing for me has just been the, like you said, maybe it's because it's forced, and I've always been somebody who bristles against being told what to do. Like always, from childhood up until now, if you tell me to do something, I am the person who immediately, like, it's stupid. I'm the Marty McFly of real people. If you tell me that don't do it, I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about it, but now I'll do it. Like, I've always been that person. And so we certainly have especially in America, we have a huge thing about that in our heads. We don't being told what to do, and we don't like being told our lives are going to be limited in any way.
See also wear a mask.
See also wear a mask. See also please don't go to a huge party this weekend. See also all that stuff. So I think like a huge part of it is just trying to get past that and trying to remember like, Oh yeah. This is me. This is me being the kid who's told like, don't eat the marshmallow. I'll give you two, but don't eat the you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can I be like, can I just wait for the better thing? Can I just enjoy this for what it is? And, it's tough. It's tough for everyone. And, I think it is interesting to see people who do it voluntarily. You know, I think before this started, I was really into art. We're always like sharing articles about like, this person moved into a 200 square foot like house, or this person gave up their job and like lives in a fucking cave that they put a heating duck in. I think we love stuff like that, you know, and we're always like, I think there's this thing in all of us that's like, what if I just fucking said fuck you to the entire construct? Mm-hmm. And right now, when we feel caught in the construct the most, I think we're most like, why didn't I just say fuck you to the construct when I had the chance?
I know, right? That's so true. So I have one more thing that I want to share about this article.
Sure.
And again, let me reiterate, this is an article in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. This is not rinky-dink organization.
No. Right?
Bottom of this article, maybe my favorite thing about this entire article about the Watsons is the very bottom of the article, a correction is listed.
Oh.
Correction.
Correction.
Quote, an earlier version of this story misstated Diana Watson's order. She takes her steak plain and with no cheese.
She called.
She was like, how dare you? Okay.
She called. She had the correction made.
I love that so much that she read the article in the Post and was like, honey, they got my order wrong. I love
that. There's literally one thing I do.
One fucking thing.
It's literally the only thing you were interested in about me.
No cheese. Plain with no cheese. Why would you say I have cheese on my steak? That's insane.
First of all, fuck you.
Who puts cheese on their steak? I'm not a monster.
This is why you never trust a reporter. This is why you never trust the press.
When Elon Musk
called me, Diana Watson, and said, don't trust the press, Diana. They're going to make some shit up. I said, Elon, you don't know them like I know them. He tried to give me the advice.
He tried. There's one more line to this correction. There is one more line. Okay.
Please.
It's the best line of the entire article in the correction. It also incorrectly stated her son Clint is adopted. He is not.
Where did they even? Where did they even?
Correction. Your son's not adopted. I don't know where we got that. I don't know why we wrote that.
Oh my God.
I know I shouldn't make such a big deal about it because it makes people go, oh, it's all fake news. All news is terrible, which I don't believe. But my God, that's gold. It also incorrectly stated her son Clint is adopted.
You got my order wrong and you told my son he was adopted. Washington Post.
The last three words of the entire article are, he is not, period.
He's not adopted. Not adopted. We don't know why we said it. We said it to hurt him. If I can be honest, we said it to hurt him.
Two things real quick. She doesn't put cheese on her steak, and her son is not adopted. Just real quick at the end.
Which one do you think she was more angry about? I think she was more angry about the cheese. Because here's the thing. You know what? Clint knows he's not adopted.
Exactly.
Clint knows. Clint's a grown man at this point. Clint knows he's not adopted. If Clint was 8 years old, that would have been a problem, right?
Yeah.
No. She's mad about the cheese. She started with the cheese. Because I think these corrections came in the order that she complained about them. I think she called them up and she was like, I can't believe what you got. Number one, I would never get cheese on my steak. On the roadkill steak? Number one. Oh, also, Clint's not adopted. He's not.
Not adopted.
Two things you got wrong. But the cheese...
The roadkill
doesn't even come with cheese. That's an add-on. We get free shrimp. We don't get free cheese.
Diana, it's Joanne, you know, from down the street.
Yeah, hey, Joanne. How are you?
Good. I just saw your article in the Post.
I know. Isn't it exciting?
Amazing.
Thank you.
I can't believe it.
You know, we didn't even think it was worth writing about. You know, we just live how we live.
You and Ron are stars now, and I never knew that you put cheese on the steak. We've been there a few times with you guys, and I never saw you put cheese on the steak.
I'm sorry, what?
And also, is Clint adopted?
No, Clint's not adopted. Go back to the other.
Did you put cheese on the steak? Because they told you, they said your order every single night, 6 days a week, cheese on your roadkill steak.
Cheese on the roadkill?
Also, is Clint adopted?
No, Clint's not adopted. Go back. They
like
said
Ron.
Cheese? They said cheese on the roadkill?
He's the spitting image of Ron.
That's an upcharge. And we don't do upcharges.
I'm on a fixed income. I know. I never saw the
people
cheese
are
on
gonna
the
thing. This is ridiculous. People are going to think we're made of money. People are going to think that we're showing off. We're not, yeah. Joanne, we're not showing off. You know we're not show-offs.
Have I been seeing the resemblance to Ron in Clint's face myself? Is he real? Is he
no,
not?
No, no, no. Clint's not adopted. But listen.
Yeah.
You know that we would never, we don't do up charges. We're not that kind of person.
No, I know. You would never. You got the free shrimps from the Christmas deal with the gift certificate.
I was very proud of the free shrimps.
That was really good, which is why I was so shocked to read about the cheese.
Once
on the
again,
and also
I cannot,
Clint.
No, Clint. Forget it, Clint's not adopted. But the cheese is a problem. Yeah, that's fucking wild. But that's fucking, but that kind of goes back to what I was saying, right? Which is like when you have this routine, it becomes deified to you.
Yeah.
Yes, it must be.
These minimalist routines, and it's like, geez, yeah, I'm calling the post.
Yeah, that is wrong.
That's anyway. So funny. Anyway, yeah, this is hilarious. And I think it's, you're right. I think it's good to think about. There are people that do things like this voluntarily, and under any other circumstances, I think we would be these people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're just sort of bristling against the confines right now.
Indeed. And I'm trying to deal with it better. You know, I really am. As no end seems to be in sight.
I'm telling you, like 3 days max, we're going to be out of this. But just in case I'm wrong, we hope that you are dealing with this as well as possible. We hope that you've got people to hang out with. If you are a patron, you know, you can always hang out on the Discord. There's a lot of great stuff going on there. We're trying to have multiple events for people every month if we can. We also know money's tight, and we know that everybody's trying to kind of, you know, go down to as few shirts and shorts as possible, as
Indeed.
Jeff was saying.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy the show and you have a little extra and you'd like to get a little extra from the show, just head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
And if you have a story that you think would make for great talking on our little talk show, there are several ways you can get it to us. You can send it via email to wehaveconcernshow@gmail.com. You can post it on our Facebook group if you're, you know, still doing the Facebook thing. Facebook.com/group/wehaveconcerns or on our subreddit, which is wehaveconcerns.reddit.com. The only way not to do that is to send it via Twitter. We're available on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata.
I'm at A Carboni, but you know, I read Twitter and I immediately expel it from my brain because that's the only way to survive. So tweet at us, but nothing important, please. Thank you very much. Good day.
And we said good day.